Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
Wrestling Observer Live is where all the news breaks. I know you may not believe that, but if you would have listened today, you would have known. You would have known the news before we gave the people the news, which I will then report on tomorrow, except not on this story. I must recuse myself.
Yes, somehow, Weekly Pro, Tokyo Sports, they have all been eclipsed when it comes to Japanese professional wrestling news by Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi on Wrestling Observer Live, as just moments ago, as we record this just after that live broadcast finished, we have learned, everyone all together at once, that it will now be Jay White versus Eddie Kingston, not just in a special singles match at New Japan's Battle in the Valley this weekend, but a loser leaves New Japan Pro Wrestling match.
Hold on. The wrestling news can confirm this. That actually happened on Wrestling Observer Live. Yes. when we thought we were going to have Eddie Kingston on the show, and then we end up with Jay White on the show, and then Eddie Kingston called into the show, we were very fortunate to not receive an FCC violation, but we were also very fortunate in that those two men know how to talk to people who they either like or don't like. They just know how to talk, and they did a very effective job speaking to each other and working themselves into a frenzy where we now have the loser leaves New Japan stipulation for San Jose. So a very eventful day for me so far.
There you go. Who knows? Maybe some other news will break during this show. I doubt it, but you never know. They're welcome to call in to the non-existent phone line we have if they want to continue, maybe add a cage match stipulation. Who knows? But yeah, certainly.
If Mercedes Moné and Kairi would like to call in to heat up what they have going on, you know, you probably should.
This would be the right podcast for it, no doubt. So yeah, we'll get to everything going on at Battle in the Valley momentarily, because that kind of has snuck up on everyone as, really, when you look at the card, a major, major show, and a show that they probably should have run a little bit bigger building, because I think they could get more than 2,504 fans or whatever the capacity is at the San Jose Civic. But before that, I don't know, Mike, if you want to get into it all, what we saw for the big New Japan Pro Wrestling show in Osaka, cheering fans. I believe it was sold out for the capacity that they had, just over 4,000 people at that show in Osaka. Not the most eventful show, I would say, outside of the main event. But man, the Okada Shingo Takagi match, it certainly lived up to what you would think it would be, even if the result really was not in doubt.
It's just nice to have the people back in and making noise, because that goes a long way. And it was a relatively pedestrian show outside of the main event, but it was the energy from the crowd that, you know, helped that out a lot. And Okada and Takagi having, well, an Okada and Takagi style match in the main event. This, I don't think, because of Omega and Ospreay, that even right now it's getting a whole lot of notches for match of the year, but it's going to get a lot of second and third place votes, at least for the first few months of the year. That's for sure, because they really did have a hell of a match. And the last three matches went about a half hour each, but they were all unique in their own ways, and I thought were all beneficial in their own ways as well, because it did shine a light on Hikuleo and El Fantasmo being able to go the 27 minutes and 25 minutes and still look good doing it. And then there were two masters in the main event.
Yeah, the main event, like you said, two masters, and it's almost hard to compare the previous matches that they had against each other during the height of the pandemic with no crowd cheering. Like, I think this was a better match than those previous matches, maybe by a considerable margin, but it's also so hard to judge, because having the crowd reactions just made it seem like so much better of a match. Certainly the best thing on the show, but like you said, the Hikuleo Jay White Loser Leaves Japan match and the Tamatanga El Fantasmo never open weight title matches were interesting in their own way. I don't know that I needed either of these to go as long as they did. I think Jay White and Hikuleo, you know, if Jay White is in fact on his way out of New Japan, which it certainly feels like that's the case, this might honestly have been one of his most impressive performances because Hikuleo, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but all I've seen from him in New Japan so far, for the entirety of his time there, like the only thing you can really say about him is that he's tall. Like there's nothing else that really stands out. He's not great in the ring. He doesn't project like a big man at all. He's not really a promo to speak of. And Jay White made him look like a guy that actually mattered for that 25 minutes and 8 seconds. It's curious that coming off of that, I don't believe that Hikuleo is in the New Japan Cup, which is very strange.
I guess, but then again, you have an angle like this where he sends Jay White packing, and because of the things that you mentioned, with having him having to take an L at some point during the New Japan Cup because you can't see him win it, you know, maybe they have some sort of alternative plan. Obviously, they do, you know, for him. So it'll be interesting to see what they do, you know, with him and Tonga and with Loa. And that still may be the best way to go as far as I'm concerned. A team of Tangaloa and Hikuleo, who where he can come along and develop and then kind of stand there at the side of Tama Tonga, who I would assume is still going to be, you know, stronger in the mix, at least, you know, for the first part of the year. So, you know, I'm interested to see what they have going on. But as you mentioned, a great performance by Jay White. And I thought, you know, Hikuleo did a damn good job, you know, going along with him. A lot of bells and whistles and all that sort of stuff too. But I thought it worked its way up well, worked itself out really well as I lose
Yeah.
my voice here at the end.
No, I thought it certainly was better than I expected it to be, particularly if you would have told me they were going to wrestle for 25 minutes. I kind of would have thought it would have meandered a little bit more. It is interesting. You mentioned Tama Tonga, who was in the semi-main event, getting the win over El Phantasmo, came out in an interview today and basically said, "Yeah, I want to do big things in New Japan still. I want to be a legend here, but WWE is knocking on the door and I just might walk through." So I don't know. It's a weird time where you kind of have all these guys mixed together, whether it be Hikuleo, Jay White, Tama Tonga, and they're all sort of being courted by WWE at the same time as they're in these storylines in New Japan.
Yeah, and I don't blame them for using it as part of the storyline as well too, because if everybody knows it, you might as well go ahead and play into a little bit and see, you know, what you can get out of it for yourself. So I can still see a picture where Hikuleo and the rest of the Tongans are in WWE. It makes a lot of sense. And frankly, you know, at this point in Tamatanga's career, you know, I guess he's kind of got to flip the coin. I mean, I still think you can go to WWE later and have some impact depending on how you're presented. But if he's going to do something right now in New Japan, you know, you look at him and Sabre and Sonata and a couple of guys like that, you know, towards the top of the card, and it's like, well, you know, it is kind of really now or never.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot more still Zack Sabre in particular in New Japan, but I mean, when I look at a guy like Tama Tonga, Hikuleo, even Jay White, like it's nothing against any of those guys. I know Hikuleo is still relatively early on in his New Japan career, but when I look at any of them, I feel like there's nothing they haven't done in the company, particularly with Tama Tonga and Jay White. There's nothing they've done in New Japan that like I haven't seen yet.
Yeah,
You know
there's a
what I
little
mean? That
unique that can really ring a bell with them. What are they going to do? You know, battle with just four guys or go at
yeah.
it with the young boys? I mean, you know,
It
they
reunites leading Bullet Club. Like there's
yeah.
only so many things you could do. We've talked at length over the past couple of years about the idea of, you know, a Jay White, you know, lone wolf babyface run, you know, that maybe results in him seeking, finding redemption as like, you know, one of the leaders on the Hantai side. I would imagine if he was sticking around in New Japan, that would have been the long-term story with him 2, 3, 4 years down the line. But I don't really have the stomach, even if he stays, to wait 2, 3, 4 more years of seeing him do, you know, the exact same match that he's been doing for the last little while. And again, that's nothing against him as a wrestler. We both love him, but as we've said over the past few weeks, I think it's time. It's just going to be crazy if, in the end, after all these guys that he's feuded with, that in storyline he's screwed over, that he's messed with, if it ends up being Eddie Kingston of all people that sends Jay White packing from New Japan for good, as we were talking about right before we started recording, it makes you wonder if, particularly at a time where, while Eddie Kingston is certainly under contract to AEW, they're not doing a whole hell of a lot with him. If Eddie Kingston knocks off Jay White and sends him packing for good from New Japan, you'd have to think that leads to a bit more of Eddie Kingston in New Japan in 2023 than him just working the occasional U.S. pay-per-view show.
A more cynical person would look at losing to Hikuleo and Eddie Kingston and say, he's got to be going to WWE. Look who they had him lose to. But,
yeah,
I don't think that's
meaning
the case.
That WWE didn't want him losing to top guys on the way out?
Or just, whatever. Okay, you can have him lose to whoever. So it's Hikuleo as opposed to a Tama Tonga, or an El Fantasmo or somebody like that. And it's Eddie Kingston as opposed to somebody else. But it doesn't matter. We're going to have a hell of a match because it's Eddie Kingston and Jay White. And once Jay White loses, who knows what his barnstorming tour is going to be? The pay-per-view for AEW is not until March. So we have about 4 weeks to go before, 3 weeks to go before we hit that point. So what are we going to see Jay White doing? Are we going to hear him be quiet? I haven't heard anything booked out yet as far as New Japan, strong dates or anything. Those won't have to be canceled. So he's got a real clear dance card right now. And Eddie Kingston with AEW, he's been online on Twitter doing his thing there, talking about, all of his grievances, how, if it's real or, fake or ribbing on the square, a little of everything. Who the hell knows what it is, but they certainly at least got some interest in this match, and I have interest in New Japan and Eddie Kingston going forward anyway, because I think he is one of those names that's really important to have. And as ROH tours and does their TV and as his AEW is doing their thing, unfortunately, Eddie Kingston's been, shuffled out a lot. And I think if he's shuffled out to New Japan, then I'm kind of fine with that as a wrestling fan and as an Eddie Kingston fan, as long as when he gets cycled back into AEW, it does mean something again when he's there. So this is interesting. Can we see this continue on in AEW between the two? Who the hell knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think like you said, it's so hard to tell where things are going with Jay White. Like, is his contract up? Is the 7-year contract still in effect? Is this all, another elaborate ploy to make people think he's leaving and he ends up in the end staying in New Japan in some completely different character or role? Does he wander the wrestling landscape as a free agent for several months? Like you said, wrestling in Impact, wrestling in AEW, before he signs with WWE, does he sign with AEW full time? How does the New Japan AEW relationship look if, Jay White basically leaves New Japan for AEW? I certainly have, we've talked about on recent episodes of this podcast, I certainly have some questions about where the AEW New Japan relationship is right now when you look at, just what is or isn't happening with Ring of Honor and New Japan, all the talk of that being of New Japan being a big part of Honor Club, that certainly has not come to the forefront at all yet. You look at the NOAH footage that was used when Darby Allin and Sting went over for Great Muta's final match, or the NOAH footage of Timothy Thatcher as they got ready to have him wrestle Bryan Danielson, and you compare that to the lack of really any footage of Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay wrestling in front of, 25,000-30,000 fans at the Tokyo Dome. I'm very intrigued to see where that relationship is going. So yeah, I guess it's true. Jay White is in fact the catalyst of pro wrestling. I guess we have to admit that.
Boy, I tell you what, it is business fantasy booking, but if Kota Ibushi and Jay White were to sign to AEW, like to really actually sign AEW deals, and I don't believe that Kota Ibushi would sign a full-time AEW deal. There's just too much over in Japan where I don't think that that is possible, but...
Yeah, can he fight Manny Pacquiao if he's signed to AEW?
I let him, because whatever money that's going to make, it's going to be more than they'll make off of a Bleacher Report pay-per-view. So yes, but Tony has got to actually make sure that he distributes that and makes all the money out of it himself. But, you know, so let's just say that they do. How quickly could a Noah DDT, you know, combination with those guys coming over cause real agita in New Japan's gut and cause them real feelings about, oh, wait a second. And look, I don't think any of that's going to happen. And I think, you know, there's a loyalty that would come from AEW side in that they are, yes, they are all open for business. But I don't think that Tony Khan is going to go out and try to spite a partner or do something that's going to intentionally hurt a partner either. But it does make you think about the landscape going forward differently. And we've said it's been coming for a while. Look, there are some people, like kids that grow up, they are Dragon Gate. That's what they are. But over the last, you know, 20 years, we've had a lot of guys, Tetsuya Endo, Konosuke Takeshita, who have gone through other routes to try to become big stars. And, you know, the more you can become a big star in America, the more your name can be known in Japan and be on the cover of Weekly Gong and all that sort of stuff. You know, now in Tokyo Sports, not working for New Japan, you know, it's interesting, very interesting.
It definitely is, particularly like you said. I mean, everybody's sort of open for business right now, but I don't know. I just wonder at what point will New Japan not be overly thrilled with their main U.S. partner working so closely with their main domestic rival. That being said, you know, for all the talk of New Japan and Noah and you know, Bushiroad and Cyberfight being rivals, they sure as hell are working together a lot right now, as we've talked about in recent weeks, and we'll certainly be talking about later in the show with the Muto Dome. So it's just a really, really interesting time. And I don't know, I just get the sense that across the board, there's no guarantee that 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, any of these relationships between promotions that feel pretty strong, that any of them are going to be in place, or maybe things will open up even wider and we'll end up with a situation where one of these companies is working with WWE as well. Who knows?
I'll take this car back through the roundabout and take it back to Osaka for a minute, just because I don't really have that many other thoughts on Osaka. We'll get to the Battle in the Valley show as it relates to Okada and Tanahashi in a moment. But two of the biggest things coming out of this are obviously Lio Rush being a challenger, the next challenger for Hiromu Takahashi, with a great video. I thought a great promo setting himself up to face off against Takahashi. And obviously, even bigger news than that, Hiroshi Tanahashi losing 3 teeth at the hands of a wicked stale protein bar.
I don't know. When I heard that, it made me think of a protein powder incident with a different wrestler that happened in Japan last year. And I would have far more expected that guy to break all of his teeth on a protein bar than Hiroshi Tanahashi. What a story. Hiroshi Tanahashi looking like he's straight out of a 70s hockey fight. He's looking like the lost Briscoe, the third Briscoe brother, I guess you could say, with those teeth. I don't know. I don't know what the deal.
What would Hiroshi Tanahashi's farm name be? If Mark is chicken, what would Tanahashi be?
His farm name. That's
soybean?
There you go. Chicken and soybean. There's an ROH TV taping coming up. Oh, so maybe, man, Tana sticks around for a couple more weeks and flies into Orlando before heading back for the New Japan Cup.
Oh, he's got hair of wavy maize in the summertime.
Oh, man. But yes, somehow he powered through that blow to his beauty to defeat Kenta just under 14 minutes. It was fine. It was a Kenta Tanahashi match in 2023 on the undercard. Your expectations can't be overly high at this point. But yeah, coming out of that, Tanahashi was nominated by Kazuchika Okada to be the next challenger for the IWGP heavyweight title. And, you know, like we said at the top of the show, that that Battle in the Valley card got bigger and bigger as the days went on. And yeah, you've got the main event now, Okada and Tanahashi for the IWGP world title in the United States. Obviously, Tanahashi isn't going to win. You'd have to figure this is one of his last chances challenging for the belt. But what a perfect match to put on in the U.S. I mean, all I know is if that was in Chicago and I had tickets for that show, I would have been bouncing off the walls thrilled when Okada nominated Tanahashi as the next challenger. There's no chance of it not being great.
Yeah, I wouldn't complain about that as a as an addition. And, you know, again, is the result in doubt? No. Are you going to see a great match? Yes. Is that really what it's all about? Yes. You know, we're still not spoiled enough as New Japan American fans to turn our noses up at an Okada Tanahashi match. At least I'm not going to do it, but it will be interesting to see if there's a challenge that comes after it and who it is.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest question I have going into this coming out of Pro Wrestling Noah's show last Sunday is Kaito Kiyomiya hopping on a plane to San Jose, and is he going to attack Okada after Okada defeats Tanahashi, like Okada attacked him after the Kiyomiya-Jack Morris match?
Oh, my God, they're going to have to keep him under wraps. Dave's going to have him wrapped under a blanket in the back of a van as they pull up to the show. It's going to be wild.
He certainly is going to have to be less of a pastel peacock than he is normally in terms of his attire if he's not going to want to be found in the San Jose Civic. But given the attack from Okada after Kiyomiya's defense against Jack Morris, which was great, we'll talk about that more, and then also Okada no-showing the press conference for the match against Kiyomiya, saying that he was deep in training for his upcoming IWGP title defense in America. I don't know. I wouldn't fall over shocked if Kiyomiya makes his way over to the U.S. and lays out Okada to end the show. I mean, that would be, that would be New Japan doing another big favor to Noah as far as, you know, helping drum up more interest for that show. But I'd love to see it.
We don't have to press Roman Reigns or WWE comparisons into this show, so I will not. Kazuchika Okada, Mr. Okada, to some of you out there, best character of 2023 so far. The perfect little twist, putting this edge on him. The, you know, hey, he can be Mr. Humble in New Japan, but you guys on the outside, hey, you know, I worked my ass off for this, and you know what? You're all beneath me, and I'm trying to put a happy face on this, but I'm just going to smack yours. Get out of my face. I love it. I love it. And I loved Kenny Omega making the big sweeping, you know, comeback and massive heel overlord that he spread all across New Japan and over Osprey. But I am loving this day-to-day bastard Okada that we're starting to see come out. I'm really loving grizzled fuck you Okada. I don't know how else to say it. I think it's great.
Yeah, him soaking in the booze after he hit the ring. And
I forgot
Kiyomiya.
How good heel Okada could be.
Yes. We had a bit of, early return as the Rainmaker Okada. All that was missing was Gato behind him. But Okada hitting that Rainmaker out of nowhere on Kiyomiya, laying him out, getting booed, and then really, really trying to get the crowd to boo him even more, which the majority of them did oblige. It was something else.
I will bring up Roman Reigns. Him as his thing has gone along, Shinsuke Nakamura coming back from Mexico, like you started seeing things and you knew things about guys that were there, but because of how they were pushed or how they were presented or just staleness, you know, it's kicking it into an extra gear. Chris Jericho has always been able to be good with this with reinvention, but this those types of reinventions can kick you into an edge. Another example of kicking into another gear. And this is perfect and perfect timing for Okada after what we've had to deal with the last couple of years. So I'm not going to be overly dramatic and go, well, this is career defining or anything like that. But in the moment, because you know how talented he is and you know what he's given you so far, it's like, man, I can see this kicking him into a whole nother gear of his career. Because the last time he was a heel, it was a lot more reliance on Gato and all of that other stuff. Now it is just Mr. fucking Okada.
Well, and I think even if we don't see him with this sort of heelish edge outside of this story with Kiyomiya, I think you're right. I think you're more right than you realize in that this has already kicked Okada into a different gear. I mean, while he's had, some great matches over the past few years here and there, like he largely has felt from a character standpoint, like he's been on autopilot, and then from the moment that kick from Kiyomiya happened, the last whatever month and a half that we've had of Kazuchika Okada feels completely different in a good way from what we've seen over the past 3, 4, 5 years. And so I'm hopeful that regardless of how this ends up playing out in the end, that a little bit of this edge carries through with Okada going forward, because it's been great to see. It's particularly when, he has the championship again and it's like, okay, what could be different about this reign than the last reign or the reign before that? How could this feel different if he's the same guy having matches against the same guys? A little bit harder edge to him, like we're seeing here, might be the answer.
Now, as we take the Okada off ramp, do you want to take it towards San Jose, or would you like to drive right to the dome where he will be driving his foot into Kiyomiya's face?
Let's go to San Jose and just briefly run down the card. There's a lot of these matches that I don't know we need to give a whole lot of time to, if any time really, but I think it's worth talking about given that this is a sellout. This is a show that New Japan is sending their film crew. This is not going to have, some sort of lesser production value. It should be a really high-end production. It starts with two dark matches, two bonus tracks, whatever you want to say. The long-running Alex Coughlin, Jer Kratos feud, which has been, was interrupted from with Alex Coughlin's injury several months ago. It's Coughlin and Jer Kratos in a singles match. We then have the second dark match, David Finlay, who you talk about, foreigners who have been in the New Japan system for a long time and are just kind of floating around, and it's hard to see what the direction is. He certainly fits that bill as well. It's David Finlay against Bobby Fish, of all people.
And the thing about this is, and we all have opinions on Bobby Fish because he's been around for so long, but I would probably get very used to seeing him in New Japan Strong, whether you like him or not, which means there's going to be opportunities that pop up with New Japan proper going forward. So he fits in really well, facing the Filthies and almost facing everybody, because he can work with almost every style. So it'll be interesting to see how they use him, if it's as a heavyweight or if it ends up being ultimately as a junior heavyweight. But, it's just with David Finlay, I just wonder what's next with him, just in general, whether it be in New Japan and what he does there or just in general, because, he seemed to be bubbling underneath there for a little bit and it's just gone downhill and dissipated. Where Juice Robinson, we kind of know why. With David Finlay, it's like, again, it's just finding the right thing for him in New Japan, I guess.
Yeah, and it just feels like this is the story time and time again with him. Most recently he talked about whatever it was, I guess it's been a year ago now, but he had that he had little bit of a feud with Jay White. He beat Jay White in the New Japan Cup. He got the match against Jay White. He had a match, match against Will Ospreay, and then he's just kind of existed, hasn't really been in Japan, hasn't really had anything to sink his teeth into in America. Just kind of just floating out there. So we'll see what happens there. We have an 8-man tag, which is one of those, just get everyone on the card type of matches. But from an action standpoint, it should be a lot of fun. It's Kushida, Volador Jr., Kevin Knight, and the DKC against Josh Alexander from Impact Wrestling, Mascara Dorada, Adrian Quest, and Rocky Romero.
I adore this match because, one, I love Mascara Dorada. When's he ever had a bad match in New Japan? It hasn't happened. Kevin Knight, DKC, futures of New Japan. They are. Well, you know what? I take that back. Somebody may snatch him up before that, but if they stick around, there's certainly going to be foreigners in New Japan in the future. Josh Alexander is tremendous at what he does, and he fits in perfectly as well to New Japan Strong. And with Rocky Romero and Volador, if anybody's been following what they've been doing in CMLL during the Arena Mexico shows and all that stuff, I mean, two old pros who are working great with each other, and I love seeing Rocky get some shine, so I will highly enjoy this match, that's for sure.
Yeah, it should be a good all-action way to kick off the main broadcast. Strong open weight title, second on the card, which is interesting placement. It's Fred Rosser defending against Kenta. To me, the main thing about this match is that it'll be really telling as far as the direction of the Strong open weight title going forward. You know, with it being on, you know, Filthy for so long, with it being on Fred Rosser for quite a while now, you know what that title is. It's the title to be, defended on and contested for on New Japan USA shows, particularly New Japan Strong TV. Now, as we've talked about in recent weeks, the business model for New Japan in the U.S. has changed. There aren't going to be Strong tapings. They're going to be using the matches from these pay-per-views to air on a weekly basis on New Japan World. And really, you know, if Kenta gets the win here, I would imagine we're going to start seeing the Strong openweight title not only continue to be defended in the U.S., but be a title that makes its way over to Japan, which, I mean, I don't know. In one sense, it's great to make that title mean a little bit more. In another sense, I think we have enough undercard titles in New Japan right now between the U.S. title, the Never Openweight title, the TV title, the KOPW championship, which is now a belt. So, yeah, it should be good. It's a different match at least, but it's hard to get a read on where they're going with this belt.
Where do you come down on the NWA World Women's Television title?
I know that it's going to be contested for in Chicago, Illinois in early April.
Are you going apparently to NWA 312?
They don't even have a venue announced yet. I would say that the likelihood of me going to that is fairly low. I would say given the New Japan participation of late in Impact, I'd say it's if I had to handicap shows that I'll be going to in April from touring promotions, it's probably more likely that I'll make one of the late April Impact shows at Cicero Stadium in Chicago, particularly if Yuya Uemura continues his excursion, if we've got some Kevin Knight, Kushida tag team action going. Yeah, I don't know that I'll be saying hi to Billy Corgan in early April.
If Billy's got any guts and brings in Rina Yamashita to face Camille, I will fly in for that match. But
that is an important caveat. I would probably go if that happened.
And back to the match. Look, Kenta is somebody who is, well, he's available for bat mitzvahs and for weddings and graduations, and he's not going to be missed if he is wrestling for House of Glory and bringing that title with him, or wrestling on AEW Rampage, and having the belt with him. I think that might be the best way to go, because I still think he can make a good deal of money barnstorming in the States. He can go back and forth. Look, you can always create a path for somebody in an angle, but right now, what does he have going on in Japan, which would make it worthwhile? So I think with all the changes that are taking place, I would say my money is not on Fred Rosser. I think it's more likely that, and here's another thing, and I don't have good recall anymore for a variety of reasons, so maybe you know, but New Japan Strong, NJPW Strong on Demand that they are pushing, obviously it's to us in the States, but is that also something they are pushing in Japan as well too? Because that then changes part of that dynamic as well.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that will continue. I mean, they've had the Japanese language broadcast of New Japan Strong from the beginning. And, you know, while they haven't said that they're going to continue that, I mean, I would imagine it would. I'm sure there's going to be a Japanese language broadcast of the pay-per-view. And so they'll probably just break it up like they're doing on the U.S. side.
And you know what? Here's the thing, too. You know, we have a NJPW television champion now, and Zack Sabre Jr. a brand new belt. So, you know, again, you have that factored into the mix too, where, you know, if you're concerned about a strong title not always be being defended, well, you're always guaranteed probably to have a badass 15-minute match if there's a show taking place in conjunction with Rev Pro on, you know, NJPW Strong On Demand and whatnot. And all of these names are going to kill me, by the way. If Premier Streaming ever gets something, I'm really going to be out of luck.
Yeah, there are a lot of options right now. It is
God, too many.
It's hard to keep things straight. I mean, it's an embarrassment of riches. I mean, I think so often about
the shit out of LimeWire.
Yeah, or Puro Jitsu Tracker.
Oh man,
I just often think about if, you know, the streaming era had been around for the glory days of Noah, you know, early to mid 2000s. How big Noah would have gotten. So, I mean, you went to Ring of Honor shows when Noah guys were on around that time, and they got reactions. Like, people were watching the shows however they could watch them, but I'm still of the opinion that if the streaming revolution happened during the height of Kenta and Mara Fuji as a tag team, and Kobashi's epic reign, all those sorts of things, there's a chance that Noah would have gotten even bigger in the U.S. than New Japan did over these past 10 years ago. But
well, and what if what happens still, where they're off NTV, it's like, who knows what changes if Gabe, you know, obviously with Ring of Honor and those guys being as big as they were in the States, you know, how that could have changed the landscape here. Could it have changed the landscape here where Impact gets choked out a little bit quicker and ROH doesn't meet the same fate that it had?
Yeah, there's a whole lot of different ways that could spider web out.
And you know what? Because I'm a professional and this is what I do for a living. Back then, Adam, my God, we used to watch these young guys out of the mitten, Detroit. Oh my God, Motor City Machine Guns, Chris Sabin, Alex Shelley. I would watch Chris Sabin and Kevin Nash do their thing on Impact. You know, you had the whole paparazzi thing. It was great. But they would do their thing and all together. And now they're still wrestling. And not only are they still wrestling, they are the strong open weight champions, tag team champions, and they're facing Jarrell Nelson and Royce Isaacs. And you know what? I lied. I wasn't professional, and that was terrible.
that was pretty good. Hey, I could have gone on a long IWA Mid-South soliloquy about Chris Sabin and Alex Shelley, and I'm sure everyone would have just been thoroughly entertained to hear me talk about my days going to IWA shows again.
I would.
But yeah, I'm very much looking forward to this. Chris Sabin, Alex Shelley, Motor City Machine Guns, strong openweight tag team champions against West Coast Wrecking Crew, Royce Isaacs and Jarrell Nelson, part of Team Filthy, obviously. I mean, I don't have a whole lot to say about this other than it should be great. And I'm hoping at some point that Sabin and Shelley parlay this New Japan USA success to getting back over to Japan and wrestling as a team. Maybe even talk about this for fantasy booking. I'd love to see somewhere down the line, Chris Sabin, Alex Shelley, and Kushida challenge the new never open weight six-man tag team champions, that being Strong Style, Minoru Suzuki, El Desperado, and Ren Narita. Hook that into my veins.
I would love to see that, but because the wrestling gods can be cruel to me, what we will instead get is the Motor City Machine Guns in Japan, but they'll be defending their Impact tag team titles against Chris Bay and Ace Austin, which would be a great match, but you know what? Be kind of a dick thing to do.
Yeah, I would enjoy watching it, but it's certainly not high on my list of things I'd want to see if they're in Japan. Give me Catch 2-2 against the Motor City Machine Guns.
I'll take that.
That would work.
I will also take a Filthy Rules fight, because we'll go right over Eddie Kingston and Jay White. Look, I think we talked that to death. Yeah, absolutely. We know where we believe that's going, but no DQ, no ring ropes, Filthy Rules, Homicide, and Filthy Tom Lawler. Blood will be shed.
Yeah, I'm hoping they go full sumo. I don't know if that will happen. I do have visions of Antonio Inoki and Masa Saito dancing in my head, particularly since Jeremy Deamer, and I just reviewed that several weeks ago on the Wrestling at Random bonus feed on the Patreon. I will imagine there will be blood. There will be short shorts. There may be bloody short shorts and everything in between. This is going to be awesome.
Will Filthy get buried under a Puerto Rican flag when this whole thing is done? Or will Filthy be standing strong? You've got to give a prediction.
I will say Filthy will be standing tall. He'll be standing strong, building momentum into his, observe this, brother, tag team encounter, teaming with one Brian Alvarez coming up next month in beautiful scenic Crown Point, Indiana.
Yeah, I got to take Filthy in this. And you know they're going to be going out there if this match order is true to form and they go out there after Kingston and Jay White, they're going to want to steal the show in a completely different way. And then we are going to have our buffer on that. And Zack Sabre Jr. and Clark Connors.
I cannot wait for this. I love the idea of the TV title. We saw the Zack Sabre Jr. Tomohiro Ishii match several weeks ago for the title. It was great. And I love the idea of Zack Sabre Jr. not only defending this in Japan, but actually for the first time in a while, venturing outside of Japan, venturing to the United States for the first time in quite a while outside of Forbidden Door in that pay-per-view, defending against Clark Connors. This is exactly the type of guy that I want to see Zack Sabre Jr. defend against. He's been in the media in Japan, you know, saying that all these young guys, the company, everyone says this is a belt for the young guys. Well, they can all come and try to take it from me. So I'm guessing we're not only going to see Zack Sabre Jr. against Clark Connors here, maybe while ZSJ is in the U.S., whether it be on a New Japan show or elsewhere, maybe Yuya Uemura will challenge him for that title, which would be great. Maybe back in Japan, we'll see not only Ren Narita challenge him again, maybe Shota Umino challenge Zack Sabre Jr. That might be a better use of Shota Umino at this point. I want some young lion against Zack Sabre Jr. action. I want the eventual endgame of Zack Sabre Jr. as World TV Champion to be Kosei Fujita. Finally learning all those moves that Zack Sabre Jr. has been teaching him mid-match, perfecting all those moves, and getting a flash pin on Zack Sabre Jr. and winning the NJPW World TV title, thus skipping Excursion and going straight to being a main roster member. Give me that.
I can't even try to match that. I'll just say, I wonder if this goes to a 15-minute draw. So you can not only come back with it, but it also sets up Kairi and Mercedes into a little bit more of a beneficial position if you get a non-finish with Zack Sabre Jr. and Clark Connors, which, you know, just because you would get a draw doesn't mean that something can't get accomplished there, and Clark Connors and Zack Sabre Jr. then having a rematch in Japan or having a rematch somewhere else, that wouldn't hurt my feelings at all. So, you know, I don't think that will happen because, you know, I like the idea of Zack having to get into deep waters and trying to do whatever he can and then somehow eking out a victory, you know. So I think he ends up doing that here, but I wouldn't fall over shocked if they actually go 15. I just think it's going to be one of those 13-48, 14-48 sort of things.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think. I think it'll get very close to the time limit. I think Zack Sabre Jr. will win. The best part about this, other than that this will be a delightful 15 minutes or less of wrestling, is that it confirms the open weight nature of the title. While it's not written into the name like the strong or never open weight titles are, we have Zack Sabre Jr., who's clearly a heavyweight in New Japan at this point, and Clark Connors, who to this point is clearly being positioned as a junior heavyweight. So I like the idea of that. I also like the idea and the fact that the IWGP Women's Championship for this show, the IWGP Women's Championship match between Kairi and Mercedes Moné, it is not second on the card. This is not like Wrestle Kingdom. It is the co-main event. Obviously, Mercedes Moné wasn't going to be opening the show, but this is much more of the positioning for this title that I would like to see. Very much looking forward to it. It's such a wild card given how long it's been since Mercedes, Sasha, whatever you want to call her, has wrestled. As much as I'd like to see Kairi continue on with the belt and see where that goes, I can't fathom any scenario where Mercedes does not win the IWGP Women's title here. I don't see it being possible.
Have they done any media with Mercedes? Have they done any mainstream media with Mercedes? And I'm asking that, you know, rhetorically, I think that I'm using that word correctly, but, you know, it's like, this match went cold, and I know it won't matter come that night when everybody's in there and people that are watching and the music hits and she comes out, and I would assume 3,500 people or whatever it is are going to pop really, really loud, and it's going to be a really, really big deal. And I bet you her and Kyrie have a really, really great match. But man, for the money that was spent, for the impact that you wanted it to have for subs along with Kenny Omega, obviously, for the January 4th show, there hasn't been a whole lot of follow-up on this, and I don't really necessarily follow Stardom's, you know, if they are doing something on their end or whatever.
Not really, to the best of my knowledge.
So it's
really.
Like with New Japan, it's like, man, okay. You know, so I'm excited for the match because I know what both can do, and I'm interested to see Mercedes in this environment, and let's just see how it goes. But I'm surprised also that for all of the effort that they've put into, you know, January 4th, you know, here we are a month and a half later, and there's really been nothing.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I guess they figure with it being, you know, it's 2,500 people, it's sold out, you know, they sold whatever the last 500, 600 tickets almost immediately after it was announced that Mercedes Moné would be on the show. I mean, maybe they feel like there's not a whole lot of work that needs to be done. I think the other issue is that, like, Kyrie's a part-timer. She's not on Stardom shows regularly. Mercedes Moné, you know, she's not appearing on any shows before this. You know, there is really no push for this match, you know, from Stardom in terms of on their broadcast, or I should say on their shows. And then on the New Japan side, you know, you're not having, obviously you're not having Kyrie or Mercedes Moné wrestling on a tour building up to this. So it's just kind of, you did the angle, and then there really aren't a whole lot of avenues outside of, you know, a pre-taped Mercedes Moné interview or some back and forth on Twitter. There aren't necessarily a whole lot of avenues for it, but it does sort of present an interesting question about how you can maintain the momentum for this title if you don't have ways to really heat up the matches. That said, you know, like I said, I expect Mercedes Moné to win, and, you know, whether it be, you know, coming up, you know, on April 8th in New Japan, or later on in the month for the big Stardom show in Yokohama, that in particular, you know, I think we'll see a few defenses from her. I think it's just a question of, after we get through that month of April and those two shows, you know, is that it for her in New Japan / Stardom, or is this, you know, a relationship that gets extended? You know, I doubt that's really been decided yet, and I'm sure, you know, it's going to be partially what her schedule is, what she wants to do. And then from the Bushiroad side, you know, if the bet that they've made on her being a real needle mover, a real someone that drives business, you know, like they've done with a Chris Jericho beforehand, you know, they're going to have to see how much that actually ends up being true, and then, you know, decide accordingly.
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. But in a show, for a show that people have to purchase, for a show that you knew you weren't going to announce a main event on because of what protocol is, which makes sense. Look, I understand why they do what they do, even though it drives some people nuts.
Just a very non-American style of booking, of waiting till a week before a show to announce the main event. Well, I guess if you're AEW, maybe it is the way you do it. But yeah, it's very different.
Yeah, and look, it's, to me, that's a temperature gauge that can always be adjusted. You know, if you find out you're getting the wrong results and need to do that, that's something that can be adjusted accordingly. But, you know, what is Chris Samsa doing besides coming up with numbers for you? Shouldn't he be doing something? What about Kevin Kelly? I know he's getting really geared up to watch the Mets in spring training, but you know what? Make him do some things. Get things out there. Push it virally, because you have not had a push. I don't care what went down in Osaka and returning cheering crowds and all of that sort of stuff that's taking place over the last month. What have you done since January 4th to promote new buys? What have you done to try to retain people that may have dropped off at the end of January and are going, well, you know what, when I get my tax money back, maybe, but you know what, I want to spend my extra money on this X weekend or this coming up to do this. So I think they've made a mistake, because if you've already invested this money in her, you might as well push it hard, because then you really do know how much he moved the needle after this, and not just the fact that it was, you know, a New Japan show, iPay-per-view. And I'm not saying that she's not going to push those numbers. I believe that she will, but I'm surprised. To me, if you're going to put that kind of effort and do everything that they did, you might as well have strapped a rocket to it for 6 weeks. And I'm not saying you had to pimp her out there or really work with her, you know, to do interviews and all that stuff. You just do all that stuff for you and see if it helps your business.
Yeah, yeah. Your point is very, very valid in that the whole reason to bring in a Mercedes Moné is to capture new fans, you know, get people excited, go viral. And yeah, I mean, the trail has gone very, very cold since January 4th. And while there aren't necessarily, you know, the traditional ways of sort of maintaining that momentum with her, as we talked about before, there are other ways, other things they could do. And yeah, you're right. They've done none of those things.
And let's be real about it. This could also be it too. You know, Kyrie gets a win here in a really great match where Mercedes still has something coming out of it. She's still going to do stardom matches, and you still have Kyrie with the IWG. So if you are concerned with being able to work with Mercedes or being able to afford her or what it would be worth to actually have that belt on her, then, hey, just keep it on Kyrie then. Have one hell of a banger match, and, you know, that's that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe this ends up being a one and done. Who knows? I mean, I don't see a scenario where she loses here and then we still see her on a Stardom show or on another New Japan show. I could be wrong, but I feel like if she loses here, it's an indication that she's one and done and she's going somewhere else. But we shall see. I still expect her to walk out.
Somebody's got to beat Jade Cargill.
That is true, and I don't think it's going to be Vert Vixen on Rampage this Friday. So
Vert Vixen.
My favorite thing, by the way, just quick aside, is on Dark Elevation when that's a weird sentence to actually say. My favorite thing is on Dark Elevation, but when play-by-play guy Paul White refers to her as Vert Vixen, meaning in the match he will call her Vert as though that is her first name. It just cracks me up.
Oh man. Oh God. How are those? I don't watch them, but I get a kick out of
weird.
How much fun that Taz, Tony, and Excalibur have, even though I think it's counterproductive sometime. They are having a good time.
Yes. On Dark, it's, you know, it's usually Taz and Excalibur, and they're just cracking each other up, and that's fine because it's pretty much a nothing show. Dark Elevation, it's actually been kind of weird lately in that I almost feel like more noteworthy things happen on that show than Rampage some weeks. Like, as far as, you know, you're seeing a lot of Claudio Castagnoli on there. You know, they've been building for feels like 4 or 5 weeks now to the Athena Yuka Sakazaki ROH women's title match on that show. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think as much emphasis as they've been putting on that, I don't think they're going to be opening the Forbidden Door, though, and having either Kazuchika Okada or Hiroshi Tanahashi on Dark Elevation at any point. It would be interesting to hear Paul White try to commentate one of those matches, but I assume he will not be doing commentary here for the main event at Battle in the Valley.
Oh, your dream would be Paul White and JR doing that match. You know
it. Oh, God. As much as I complain about that, though, JR does get, I mean, there are certain guys that he actually still gets up for as far as doing announcing, and Tanahashi is a guy, and Okada too.
Yeah, both of these guys are definitely two of them.
He would get hyped up calling their New Japan matches, and when they showed up on AEW, you know, that jostled him out of his slumber a little bit. So he'd probably be better on that than a, you know, Orange Cassidy, Kip Sabian match main eventing Rampage. Be that as it may, we talked about this a lot earlier.
We'd all be better off without that. I'm sorry.
That is true. Those of us that don't watch and the 385,000 or so that do. That being said, Okada Tanahashi in the U.S., this has happened once before as far as a singles match in Dallas at the G1 in the United States with Okada versus Tanahashi. Okada winning. Like I said, I don't see any way Tanahashi wins here unless they really, really, really want to heat up the Kiyomiya Okada deal. And, you know, Kiyomiya one-ups Okada. Not only does he come out and attack Okada, he doesn't do it post-match. He does it during the match, lays out Okada, and Tanahashi None the wiser, gets the win and wins the IWGP world title. It's not going to happen, but, you know, we'll see. They got to do – I still feel like we've got one more thing happening with Kiyomiya and Okada before we get to the 21st in just 5 days as we record this.
If this was going to go on all year, I'd do that. You know, and you can make a better case for doing that. But no matter what we think about this, it's one more show. And it's without titles on the line. It's a fight. So Okada getting his comeuppance for being a prick and looking down upon Noah and looking down upon Kiyomiya, that comeuppance could be had at the Dome. And because of that, then you're just going to have one great one-on-one match, in my opinion, then between Okada and Tanahashi, where, you know, it's not going to be 10 years ago at the Tokyo Dome, but it's going to be more than enough for everybody that's going to be watching in that building and probably watching at home. So Okada gets the victory. I don't think we have anything like that, but boy, as a wrestling fan, I would love to see something wacky in sideways like that go down. I mean, you could have a, you know, hey, Okada's here, and hey, I'll be damned, look, it's, you know, whoever. I mean, I know, unfortunately, Joe Doring, I don't think could be a person, but you could do something where, my God, if you could, it would be great if it would happen. It's probably not worth the money of him coming over here in their eyes to heat that up to do that. I think you might get more out of just Okada as a set-up press conference deal where he's just being a dick and running Kiyomiya down in the States saying, hey, nobody even knows him here or something like that, which also could open up the door again, Kiyomiya coming up for WrestleMania weekend, which is, again, another little factor in this too where – you know, how many guys are going to be over here in LA, you know, from Japan in general? It's going to be a lot from every promotion.
Yeah, yeah. There's really, there's no Noah presence, to the best of my knowledge, yet on those shows, but there's sure as hell is a lot of, and there's sure as hell is a lot of cyber fight presence overall with the Tokyo Joshi Pro show, the DDT show, and everything else going on. And yeah, things keep getting added left and right to all those shows WrestleMania weekend. So one never knows. Let's, before this show gets too far afield, because we don't do short shows here.
I say I could take it that way. I could.
I think we're, let's try not to go that, try not to go that direction. And let's make sure we get into this before we close the show out, talking about, as you mentioned, the Keiji Muto Grand Final Pro Wrestling Last Love Holdout, Wrestle Universe and ABEMA pay-per-view event, the Tokyo Dome, coming up in just 5 days as we record this, February 21st. It honestly doesn't even feel like it's a pro wrestling show, pro wrestling Noah show necessarily when you look at everyone on the card, but we have 8 matches on the main card, 3 bonus tracks. I'm just, more than anything else, I shouldn't say more than anything else, because Kiyomiya Okada is by far the thing I'm most intrigued by on this show or on any show coming up this year. I will be fascinated to see what the attendance is for this. You know, if they get above that 25 to 30,000 that New Japan had for Wrestle Kingdom, I think that would be incredible. I don't know how realistic that is. I would say if you get to 15, 20,000, you know, in this era, that would be, I would view that as a success. I don't know kind of what the business metrics they have for this are, but all the reports are they're going all out from a production standpoint to make this look and feel like one of the biggest events in the history of Japanese pro wrestling. And the, you know, the lineup, you couldn't put together much more than what they did for the show when you look at across the board, the promotions represented. So we talked about before, outside of Stardom, you have pretty much every major promotion of note is involved in a big way.
And it should be that way. You know, it should be that way for, and it's because it doesn't even seem real. You know, it really doesn't, that we've gone through how many last matches for Keiji Muto, you know, how long this retirement tour has been. And it's been something that, you know, I don't think any of, you know, we didn't push his retirement. We just wanted to not see him as a regular fixture in NOAH. And
as at the top of the card, no one was saying you are not allowed to ever wrestle again.
No.
But I think we were saying we forbid you from being the GHC heavyweight champion.
Now, when it comes to Fujita, I mean, no, maybe we can, maybe we don't want you to wrestle anymore. But look, but seriously, it's wild. And I love most of the matchups on their show. I wish, even though it means nothing, this is just me, just I wish it would have been a TJP versus somebody 6 or 8 woman match where we could have even had more, you know, outside talent in for the show. But it's just, it's wild. And I've had a chance to see, except for when he was in Florida, I've had a chance to see Keiji Muto's entire career here in the States and then over in Japan. And it's just wild. And Naito is a great opponent for him to go out with. I think he hits the moonsault. I think we do see that. I don't, you know, history would dictate Naito comes out of there with the victory, but Keiji Muto is Keiji Muto. And if he goes out as a winner, you know, I don't think he will, but if he were to go out as a winner, it wouldn't hurt my feelings.
Yeah, it would certainly be on brand for Keiji Muto. It's also interesting, and who knows, he's a worker to the end, but all his talk about not being able to walk, his knees, his back being so much worse than they already have
he
been.
He tore four hamstrings.
Yes, yes. He all the hamstrings, all the ACLs, the MCLs.
Dr. Keith reminded me, remember the picture he had where he was all bandaged up and he had the big ice pack on his head?
Yes,
and
yes.
Yeah, you needed
that.
That
will be his entrance gear for this match.
Oh, my God. And who's going to show up? You know, Sting, Ric Flair, Masahiro Chono, you know, how many luminaries are we going to get? How many video packages of names we go, hey, you know, it is going to be something else because he's a god. He's a made man. He's somebody that every promotion, including WWE, is going to send something in on. So it's going
for sure,
to be a long show, but it is going to be a really, probably a really, really fun one.
Oh my God. I can't see any way this isn't going to be at bare minimum. The floor for this show is really fun and the ceiling is about as high as it gets. So let's start looking at the card itself. Starting Love. I think we all love some Starting Love. Masa Kitamiya and Daiki Inaba, the new GHC Tag Team Champions, against Yoshiki Inamura and Yasutaka Yano. Obviously a non-title match there. That is just, it's just something to start the show. Then we move to the, as you mentioned, Tokyo Joshi Pro. Their offer match, Yuka Sakazaki, Miyu Yamashita, Shoko Nakajima, and Rika Tatsumi against Mizuki, Maki Ito, Miyu Watanabe, and Yuki Arai. This is, you know, a showcase, but it also is, you know, it's a dark match, a bonus match, but it is a preview of the upcoming Yuka Sakazaki, Mizuki, Tokyo Joshi Pro, Princess of Princess Championship match, the two tag partners colliding in March. So, you know, that's something to look out for as well. And much like with seeing, you know, Tam Nakano and Kairi on the big stage at Wrestle Kingdom and how cool that was to see, here, this is a dark match. I'm just hoping that there are enough people in the crowd that this feels like the moment you would hope it would be, you know, for these 8 wrestlers.
I just, as we move to the next one, 6-man match, Sugiura, Satoshi Kojima, and Timothy Thatcher against Jake Lee, Jack Morth, and Anthony Green. I just, why this was not just an 11 match show, I have no idea.
The only thing I can figure is that, you know, I guess though it's Abuma pay-per-view. It's not like it's being broadcast on network TV or something. I don't know why. I can't imagine there would be any time constraints why you wouldn't just have this be part of the main card. What I'm hoping for out of this more than anything is that post-match Timothy Thatcher reassesses his career and life and decides to join GLG as a good-looking guy with those teeth.
and take all that shine away from Jake Lee as he's just starting out. We can't have that kind of comedy just yet. No, we got to wait.
No, I'm sure we'll have some ridiculous ridiculousness.
We need Kojima and him eating bread first, and we can just have all the pieces that don't get taken out of it because of Thatcher's teeth.
Yes, yes, and Anthony Green's teeth as well. I love the idea that he's GLG and he's going full Tana with the missing front teeth. Well. It's high comedy. We have the opening match of the show itself, New Explosion, Yoshinori Ogawa, Eita, Hayata, Chris Ridgeway, and Daga teaming up, which is odd because we had Stinger explode, as things always do in the junior heavyweight division, the most ridiculous division in all of pro wrestling. But they are, at least as of now, scheduled to team against Atsushi Kitoge, Yohei, Seiki Yoshioka, Alejandro, and Junta Miyawaki. I would imagine if it hasn't already, that card will have to change, though, with Seiki Yoshioka out with injury. I'll actually look and see if I can find if that card has changed at all. But that is just, we talked about it with the eight man on the New Japan Battle on the Valley show. This is a let's get all our juniors on the card match.
Yes, and guaranteed moves to be had throughout the whole thing. So,
yeah, it will be a fast paced battle, if nothing else, for sure. I can't fathom Noah and Nosawa missing the opportunity to have someone turn on someone here. To just show off their junior heavyweight division in front of the biggest possible.
Well, yeah, your junior tag champs are in there, so you could have one of them turn on each other.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we basically already had that. We came close to that in Osaka this past weekend, so maybe we'll go full bore there. We then move to the DDT offer match, as it's Mao, Shunma Katsumata, Yuki Ueno, and Toi Kojima against Tetsuya Endo, Hideki Okatani, Yuya Kuroku, and Takeshi Masada. If you listened last week, Takeshi Masada is the rookie, like, what, 3-4 months experience at this point that we're just raving over last week. So it will be exciting to see him on this big stage, because he sure as hell seems to me like he's going to be the next big heavyweight star in DDT, sort of, you know, coming on the heels of the tradition of a Kota Ibushi, a Konosuke Takeshita, going down that line.
Well, he, Ueno, and Endo, let's see where their stock is by the time, you know, the end of Mania weekend rolls around, you know, on all three of those guys, because, you know, different levels right now. But again, you know, if how much focus is going to be, again, what happens after this show for both Noah and DDT is going to be, again, nice. We have a lot moving forward here for this year.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's it's kind of the thing with a lot of the, really all the Cyber Agent, Cyber Fight promotions, you know, you're just waiting on the next generation, or at least seeing that finally in Noah with Kaito Kiyomiya being the focus of the promotion. But you look at Tokyo Joshi Pro, and, you know, as much as I enjoy their shows, like, I'm waiting on Suzume to, you know, make that leap to being in the, you know, in the big title mix, or Risu Endo at some point, you know, or are they going to be the next, you know, 2 years from now, are they going to be the next Mirai, in that they were just there, not seemingly having a chance to move up the card, and then they end up in Stardom, which unlocks their potential, and boom, you got a main eventer. So that'll definitely be something to follow going forward.
We got a unique clash of styles in the Dragon Gate against Noah six man, with Shun Skywalker, Kai, and Diamante against Ninja Mac, who makes perfect sense in that equation. And then, well, his name would make you think that, and EO del Dr. Wagner Jr., and then Naomichi Marufuji, who, you know, look, old man, I don't know here. You know, I respect it. I think he's going to do great. But I just, you know, the visual at this point of Marufuji, who does, I want to say looks older than ever. I mean, my God, who the hell am I to talk about him? But, like, my God, it's going to be a bunch of whirling dervishes going around him. And then he's going to look over every once in a while at Wagner like, man, we got to hit the ground here a little bit.
I'll be interested to see who among those three guys he's in the ring with the most. You talk about, like, time machine dream matches. If you had Shun Skywalker of 2023 opposite Naomichi Marufuji of, like, 2003, 2004, 2005, you could do a lot worse than that. I'm also looking forward to being amused by Diamante and the nowhere near as good version of Diamante, Hijo de Dr. Wagner Jr., in the ring against each other. Mirror images, but one is a funhouse mirror reflection of the other.
And Kai, still here after all these years.
Still here, Kai. I mean, I go back to God, like when he debuted in All Japan, like the same generation of guys as Hiroshi Yamato. And Kai has just wandered the landscape and found himself a home in Dragon Gate of all places over the past few years. So yeah, he it's fitting that he has a prominent position here on this Keiji Muto card. We then really start to move into the business end of the card as it's Kento Miyahara, Suwama, and Yuma Aoyagi, a dysfunctional team if there was one, of All Japan wrestlers, taking on the Kongo group of Kenno, Katsuhiko Nakajima, and Manabu Soya. There's a lot of different matchups here that intrigue me. Aoyagi and Kenno, we talked about it, just the differences in personality there should be very fun. But dying to see the Kensuke office reunion slash explosion of Kento Miyahara and Katsuhiko Nakajima. It's been a long time, and I'm dying to see these two guys go at it. And I'm hoping against hope that in the not too distant future, as we've got to be getting very close to the announcements of who will be in the champion carnival for All Japan, can Noah just send Nakajima to go do that tournament? He's not doing much of Noah right now, and I want to see him against Miyahara several times, not just once.
This is the dark horse match of the night and could end up with six guys giving real big middle fingers to the end of the show, not out of, you know, disrespect to Muto, but just more at Kiyomiya and Okada as like, hey, we're over here. You know, if I'm Miyahara, if I'm Aoyagi, I'm doing that. If I'm Nakajima, I'm figuring I'm walking around all of the time like that anyway to everybody. So Kenno is Kenno. So I am really looking forward to this. And I think it probably, at least, if you look at the main event as the best spectacle, if you look at Kiyomiya and Okada on paper as being what should be an amazing match, this has got to be three. And you never know if there's a little trip up, you know, in the semi-main event, this could steal the show.
Yeah, no, that I think that's a great point. And I think it's one of the things I'm most excited about on this show is particularly from the All Japan side, Miyahara and even more so Yuma Aoyagi getting a chance to wrestle in front of a huge audience. And, you know, people can see, you know, what really is kind of one of the best kept secrets in wrestling right now, which is how great of a wrestler Yuma Aoyagi is. Like if we're doing wrestler of the year through the first 6-7 weeks, which is a ridiculous thing to do, I think you get outside of the likes of Will Ospreay, and to me, Yuma Aoyagi and Kento Miyahara, really, they're both right there. So,
and let us note too, Suwama, who throughout, you know, many administrations, including Keiji Muto's, you know, ended up winning, what are we at, 8, you know, and yes, it means what it means now, but 8 Triple Crown championships. I mean, you know, Muda's part of his legacy in All Japan, you can, you know, is attached directly to Suwama.
Well, 100%. He, you know, it's fitting he's on this show. I'm hoping that we'll see more of him just being badass pro wrestler Suwama, and we don't have a lot of Taru hijinks. I'm not looking for, not looking for
Brother Yasi
pipe
in the house.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully that's at a minimum, meaning nothing here, but yeah, it's good to see Suwama get that spotlight as well. We then have the match afterwards, which the Finale de Lucha build as Nosawa's last match, which it's not going to be, but it's Nosawa and Masada against Taiji Ishimori and Gato. This is the this is a, like, whatever, 2004 Divas Championship match as a buffer between all the big matches.
I don't have a problem with it because I assume it's going to be played a lot for comedy. It's going to be
100%
the big come down between that All Japan versus Noah thing. And, you know, we may very well have hijinks afterwards, you know, that where then we get this, which moves us on to Amakusa and Hiromu Takahashi, or Amakusa. How do you say it?
Amakusa.
Thank you. You should hear me at 5:30 in the morning doing the wrestling news. It's just, it's, you know,
you should offer a Patreon tier for that.
The simplest words, the things that you have said for so long will be the thing that trips you up, and then you cannot get over that mental block. But Amakusa and Hiromu Takahashi, look, Takahashi, the Pied Piper of junior heavyweights throughout Japan, he is not only going to main event during one of the days at the Tokyo Dome in 2024, he is going to bring 2,400 junior heavyweights with him, and this is going to be yes. a mass showcase of that. And I would assume not long after this do we hear that Amakusa is going to be a member of the big junior heavyweight international blowout.
Yep, the Junior Festival coming up, the New Japan World pay-per-view on March 1st, which already has more wrestlers announced for it than the entire AEW roster, which is not something I would have expected. The press conference with these two is hilarious, where Hiromu Takahashi is talking about how there's a three-month period where he was on excursion, I believe, in the UK, and Amakusa, under his original name as a Michinoku Pro wrestler of Kenbai under a mask, was there as well, and they wrestled each other several times. And Hiromu's saying all this, and Amakusa is just completely not acknowledging it. Like, in his mind, in this press conference, he has never been a wrestler other than this character. He does not acknowledge that he does not acknowledge that he was Kenbai. He does not acknowledge that he was Yuki Sato. He does not acknowledge that he was Ao, which just took place like a year ago. The Hao character in Pro Wrestling Noah, and he's referring to Hiromu as Lord Hiromu. So there's some unexpected wackiness here. I guess there's always a degree of wackiness you expect with Hiromu, but yeah, this should be great. And yeah, this will be a nice taste of whatever insanity we're going to see on that Junior Festival show about a week and a half later.
Well, would you cop to any of that?
Valid point. He's at the height of his career right now, and so no reason to look back.
Who wins?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I would say Hiromu. The other thing about this is that, like, at some point in this relationship of doing these interpromotional shows, Noah's got to get something on New Japan, which it kind of leads into talking about the...
Because if you look at this, like, the final four matches, and you go, well, Muda's retiring, so Naito's getting the victory. Ishimori, you know, very easily, you know, could get the victory in the Finale de Lucha match.
Yeah, no, Sal was losing that match for sure.
And Hiromu... And
you look at the All Japan versus Noah match, and the obvious fall guy there is Soya.
Yeah, and so, yeah, so you can throw that fifth one into the mix. So it's like, well, shit, you know, after those four, I mean, Kaito Kiyomiya should beat Kazuchika Okada.
It's with the story they're telling, it's what makes these interpromotional shows and matches so great, is that it's so hard to predict how it's going to go other than the most likely here with a non-title match, it's champion versus champion, is they go 60. But if you take that out of the equation, or they go 30, I don't know if this is going to have a 30 or 60 minute time limit, but if there is going to be an actual definitive winner in this match, if someone is going to win via submission or pinfall, the story they're telling, it has to be Kaito Kiyomiya. He got punked out last year in the tag match at the New Japan versus Noah show. He punks out Okada at the New Japan versus Noah show this year. Okada completely no-sells all of it, then murders Kiyomiya at Noah's show after Kiyomiya successfully defends the GHC heavyweight title. Okada has to lose to Kiyomiya here, unless it's just going to be a 60-minute draw. But it's such a weird thing, because if Okada does lose to Kiyomiya, it sets up the obvious rematch at some point and completely undercuts, I think, any interest in seeing who wins the New Japan Cup, you know, to go on and challenge Okada. It's hard to say. I mean, the most logical thing, though, is Kiyomiya beating Okada here at some point before the G1, Kiyomiya loses the GHC heavyweight title to somebody else and then goes into the G1, wins a bunch of matches, but, you know, in the on the final night, loses to Okada. Okada gets his win back. But I don't, you know, I don't know. We have not seen in this era of New Japan, this Gato-led era of New Japan booking, how willing they are or aren't to actually put Okada or whoever the top guy is at any given situation in a situation like that to drop a fall to another promotion's champion on a massive, massive show in front of a huge audience. It's hard to predict.
Well, you think they needed to get Noah's permission to have Keiji Muto on the Dome Show, New Japan Dome Show?
I would say so. I would say so for sure.
You think Noah knew that one of the reasons that they really wanted to have Keiji Muto, at least you could argue or theorize one of the reasons why is because they did not want to be one-upped by Noah, not only for attendance, but how that would look as far as the legacy, since, you know, Muto was, you know, kind of a big part of that third generation?
Yeah, 100%. I'd be shocked if that wasn't the reason.
Well, in that case, you know, and New Japan's gotten the, you know, pretty much got the jump on you last year, came out of it being New Japan where you were Noah, and now we have this year where they're working with you again after all of this stuff that's happened. No title on the line, you know, it's not going to be the end of the world for Kiyomiya to have a little coin in his pocket, especially when you could always play up Okada. Oh, I don't know. Not being really interested in this. And yeah, maybe he'll show up and do this, but is he really in training right now? Remember, he's in chaos. He and Toru Yano, we could find out later on, are eating candy bars, and he's not taking it seriously because he is beneath him. So we'll see. I think Kiyomiya can get the victory here and nobody loses anything. And from Okada and New Japan's side, you could always kind of blow it off until it comes time where you don't want to blow it off anymore. And now I'm pissed off that you beat me. And yeah, it wasn't for a title. And yeah, I didn't really care. But you know what? Now I do. Now we're really going to have stakes. And at that point, depending on what you've done with Kiyomiya and that GHC title, which, again, because I don't give a shit what happens with Okada here from this point forward, after all of this, Noah, after all of this with the pandemic and with old guys and all this stuff, what you got next? What you got next? So it better be good. So we'll see what happens here. I think Kiyomiya gets the victory, but what's next then for him after this?
Yeah, yeah. It's, for all the reasons you just laid out, to me, it's the most intriguing match, one-on-one singles match in Japan in a long, long time. I know personally, I can't remember the last time I was this excited about a singles match and all the potential ramifications that could spiderweb off of it. And then, yeah, there's still one other match on the show. It's the retirement of Keiji Muto against Tetsuya Naito, as we mentioned earlier. Who knows what shape Muto's going to be in to have a singles match, but like you couldn't, short of getting the Rock, which clearly wasn't going to happen, no matter how much Keiji Muto tried to make that happen. There aren't too many other opponents that make more sense that are, you know, a bigger match you could have realistically for Keiji Muto than, you know, him against a guy who he has a ton of history with and a guy who is undoubtedly the, you know, still the biggest star and the biggest ticket mover as far as regular appearing wrestlers in Japan goes. So yeah, I guess it's just, will Muto get one more win on the way out the door, or does this go the way it normally goes when wrestlers retire, which is they go out hearing a three count, looking up at the lights?
Now you really have me thinking if the Rock is going to send in a video or not.
I would be shocked if we don't at least get that here. Huh. The other thing to me, the most intrigue about this match from purely an in-ring standpoint, I don't know. So Naito's got to win, right? He has to. But there's a 0% chance of Naito being able to hit the Destino on Keiji Muto. We saw Minoru Suzuki's legs go out on him when he tried to base for the Destino a few months ago or last month. There is no way Keiji Muto is going to be able to stand and be able to base for Naito enough for Naito to make that full Ferris wheel rotation on the Destino and hit it. I don't know how they're going to do this.
Yeah, see, what happens is Naito kind of bounces off the ropes and goes to fling himself at Muto, and Sonata trips him up from the outside, and that brings Naito to a knee, and that's perfect for Muto to hit the Shining Wizard, and then, you know, get the victory, and then, you know, from Muto to Sonata, you know, it's finally time to get serious, and he pile drives Naito through a table on the outside, and then says forever a bunch of times.
Hey, at this point, I'm looking at this card, and I don't see Sonata on here at all, which is insane. And so I've heard worse ideas. They're going somewhere. That's probably not going to happen, but they're going somewhere with this Sonata malaise, the Sonata losing streak.
I never thought about that with the finisher, though, because, you know, I'm like, hey, in all seriousness, I think Naito gets the victory, but I didn't really think of that. You know, do you do a schoolboy?
Stardust Press, I guess, would be fitting if he beats Muto with the next generation version of a moonsault, the Stardust Press. I think that's far more likely than the Destino. Like, I would say it's more likely that Muto decides to bust out one final moonsault.
I think he
than
will.
It is that he can take the Naito, the Destino.
He's gonna be so shot up with gimmicks. You know, it's going to be, you thought Patrick Mahomes at the Super Bowl was something. You ain't seen nothing like that, because I honestly.
God, can you imagine the post-match promos if that's the case, given his promo after the Nakamura match? Watch out. Talk about not being fit for FCC. You will not be able to simulcast that on Wrestling Observer Live.
Especially because the Zimas will immediately be flowing, or whatever the sponsor is backstage. So it is going to be a circus, but it's going to be a spectacle, and I'm looking forward to it. The Keiji Muto grand finale, pro wrestling last love holdout, with a lot of different, at least on Puro Love, just too many looking like why are there so many quotations in here? Tildes everywhere. Noah,
you're a punctuation society, I guess. I don't know. It is, yes, it's another one of those shows where it's got a wacky name. Every match has its own name. That's how you know it's a big show. So, yeah, that is, if you are a Wrestling Universe subscriber, just be aware. This is a pay-per-view. It's something you have to pay separate for, much like we saw with the New Japan versus Noah show. Last month, I believe it's right around, it's 4,000 yen right now. I think it goes up to 5,000 yen as we get closer to the show. But I think it's around $28, $29 American with the conversion rates right now. I don't know. I would imagine it'd probably be at least 7 days before it ends up being on the, you know, regular Wrestle Universe subscription page without having to pay extra for it.
Oh, just pay the extra, for Christ's sake.
Yes. You know? If there's ever going to be a show you're going to pay the extra for, this is the one to do it.
Yeah.
Before we close the show out, Mike, the only other thing I really wanted to bring up, because it's a huge bummer, we're huge fans of this wrestler, and it was announced pretty much 5 minutes after we finished recording last week's show when you talked about her being a future Wonder of Stardom champion. Both sad to see that Himeka is going to be retiring. Her retirement road starts now and leads through to, I believe it's the Stardom Grand Queendom show at Yokohama Arena coming up on April 23rd, where she will have her retirement match against Mika. She has a big match coming up against Chihiro Hashimoto on March 4th and several matches before then. But yeah, very sad to see her retire at the age of 25. It was one of the first things that, when we were texting back and forth, you mentioned, yep, that's the age where we used to see this a lot more back in the day.
Sorry, as I jostled with the volume button there, but yeah, I was very disappointed, not only because we had just talked about her in the way that we did on the last episode of the show, but just because, man, yeah, it was a throwback to the time where, you know, women would retire at 25 years old. And I think, you know, I think women in Japan, I think everybody in Japan in some cases gets into the business a little bit too early. You know, that wasn't really the case with her. You know, she was not in for all that long, and she was in stardom for a much shorter period of time. You know, and it's disappointing to see her go out because I did like her so much. And some of the matches that she's going to have, Chihiro Hashimoto on the way out the door, her wanting to have a hardcore match with Suzu Suzuki, it's like, oh, come on. You know, you're going to hit us with all these great matches and then right off into the sunset. But you know what? If that's what makes her happy, that's awesome. But damn, as a fan, I selfishly would have liked more.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's a shame because it's like the big run of her getting a singles title and having a lot of big singles matches that we are hoping for. Well, we're going to get that over the next few months. But as you said, it's going to be the end of her career. In the press conference, she stated that from the beginning, her goal, her idea when she started as a wrestler was that she would only wrestle for 5 years. And that's what this will turn out to be, a 5-year career. But man, it's, you know, obviously stardom will be fine. They have, you know, a loaded roster, you know, beyond really what almost any company in the world has. But, you know, it's someone who, while they had not pushed as being a top wrestler, you could always slot in like they did when Kyrie was out sick and they put Himeka into the match with Saya Kamatani and they had an awesome match. She was always going to, at worst, be in that utility role where she could always be pushed up momentarily as a main eventer. And then, you know, we just talked about last week, the first stardom show with cheering that they had, her and Micah against Nanai Takahashi and Yu. Himeka and Micah were the most over wrestlers on the show in that match. And so it makes you think even more like, man, if she had stuck around and the crowd interest, the crowd support had really continued to rally around her, you know, there's a scenario where maybe we would have gotten that top singles star run that we've been hoping for. But again, if this is what she wants, then obviously everyone has to support it. It'll be interesting to see on the Donna Del Mondo side where they go, how they bolster that group. It looks like, coming off of the last few shows, Lady C, who had been teaming with Micah and Himeka in the trios tournament, in the Triangle Derby, even though they are not in the same faction, Donna Del Mondo is recruiting Lady C to try to join the group. I would not say that's a one-to-one comparison or replacement, but it's something.
It's something. I'm not as big on Lady C as some people are. Although her and Mei Sakurai as, you know, bumping around there, I guess it makes Micah stand out a little bit more now. Yeah. That if you were going with the old Midnight Express, you know, deal of twin daughters of different mothers, you know, now that Himeka's gone, it makes Micah stand out a little bit more. And who's to say that Lady C be the only addition to this group? You know, could we have somebody, you know, with a little bit more power or name, work their way in? Who knows? You know, we'll have to see what it is moving forward. They certainly don't need anybody else. And frankly, you know, Thekla could actually be somebody that actually benefits from this a little bit. Everybody knows she's Julia's right-hand person anyway. You know, she can be more up at the forefront, whereas, you know, at least in my mind, because of how they came in, you know, Julia was right up front. Over one shoulder was Himeka, and over the other shoulder was Micah. So, you know, it does lead to, you know, somebody stepping back because they are so loaded. Somebody's going to step forward.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think to me, the biggest question or the most interesting thing to follow will be, is this beginning of Micah being a more featured top-of-the-card singles wrestler, or do they bring in someone or shift someone from another faction to be Micah's tag team partner, and she continues more in that upper mid-card singles, but as someone who's always in the tag title mix. So,
and for all of these groups, too, moving forward, if we are going to have more women coming over again, too, you know, are we going to see, again, where I it is tough for me to believe that we're some of the foreigners like Mariah May and that this isn't it. We're going to see a lot more of this as the year goes on, and that's also going to change these factions up.
Yeah, it's something for some of these factions, we've never seen them exist in Stardom. You know, Donna Del Mondo was one example where you had a lot of people coming over from the US or Europe into the promotion. So it'll be interesting to see
Yeah, the ones
if
that didn't exist at all, like God's Eye.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's interesting times in Stardom for sure. There's not we've got se we've got several Triangle Derby shows coming up, but the next major show of any huge importance, I guess it's not that huge. I mean, it's a Stardom and Showcase shows. Those are always wacky. They're interesting. We talked about it last week. UWF Rules match, Shuri versus Saki Kashima. The hardcore match with Julia, Micah, and Himeka against Risa Sera, Suzu Suzuki, and Kurumi Hiragi of Prominence. And then the Captain's Fall match with Cosmic Angels against Cosmic Angels slash Club Venus. So that's what's coming up on the Stardom front. My words are starting to break down, Mike, so we should probably close it out.
I never had a shot from the beginning, but 3 hours after I started talking this afternoon, yeah, I need to stop right here. You know where I'm at Semper Vivi, at Mid-Atlantic Pod, patreon.com/Mid-Atlantic Podcast, at Wrestling News AV, the Wrestling News, wherever you find your favorite podcasts, you can find the Wrestling News between 5 and 15 minutes every morning, usually updated by about 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern Time during the week. We give you a little extra time on the weekend, especially on Sunday, where there's a lot of news internationally. That's usually by about 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Everything you need to know from around the world of wrestling. Did you fall asleep during Raw? Did you just ignore Rampage like a lot of people do? Why do I care about what's taking place in the NWA or the World Wrestling Council or AAA or any of that stuff? I don't care about it, but I kind of have an interest in titles. Can you tell me who won? We can do that for you. TheWrestlingNews.com, Wrestling News AV on Twitter, Facebook, on the Arcadian Vanguard YouTube page, Arcadian Vanguard, where also the Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast is. All the archives of that show. I have a Patreon for it. I already told you that. But if you have some money and want to give it to my Patreon, that would be great. If you have any left over, why don't you give it to Adam's Patreon? Because he's got a lot going on as well.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that.
It's
We've got
funny how long I could go with that. Holy shit.
Wrestling at Random. The free feed is available at wrestlingatrandom.com or by searching Wrestling at Random wherever you get your podcasts, including most likely where you're getting this podcast. Show I do with Jeremy Deemer every week. We review randomly chosen wrestling shows. This week's episode, which goes up on Sunday, relevant to the interests of listeners of the Big Audio Nightmare, as it is an episode of All Japan Pro Wrestling Television from April 1978.
Ooh.
We have it's from Corican Hall, main event, Ric Flair and Kim Duck against Giant Baba and Jumbo Tsuruta.
Wow, Tiger Chung Lee and Ric Flair.
Yes, and they are, spoiler alerts, a well-oiled machine as a tag team. I was blown away watching it. You hear us talk about all of that on Sunday or whenever afterwards, but it goes up on Sunday. Also on that show, the Destroyer against a 21-year-old Gino Hernandez.
Wow. Wow.
A fun little time capsule of a pro wrestling show that the randomizer chose for us. And then over on our Patreon, where you get even more bonus content, new exclusive episodes that only go up on our Patreon feed. We also have a higher tier where people can be the randomizer, the intentionalizer, as I like to call it, and choose a show for us to watch. This week over on the bonus feed at patreon.com/wrestlingatrandom, we are reviewing Slammery 1994 from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Slamboree was in Philly that year?
Yes.
Oh my God.
It's basically the entire ECW Arena front row was front row for this show,
What?
starting chants such as "Sting must die." So it is
Is this,
quite the
please
program.
tell me, what is the Max Payne Cactus Jack? We had to have something like that on
Well,
there.
it's it well the month before Spring Stampede was the show that I was at with Nasty Boys against Cactus Jack and Max Payne. Here, it's the Nasty Boys against Cactus Jack and Kevin
Kevin
Sullivan
Sullivan.
in a Broad Street Bully street fight with
Dave Schultz
yes! as the referee. But
now I remember watching it.
Yes, Max Payne does make an appearance at the end of the match. I won't spoil it, but if you want to hear us talk all about that, patreon.com/wrestlingatrandom. You can support the podcast that way.
Oh, wow.
That's it. My mouth, my words, my brain, they're all gone.
I never would have remembered that show at all, but now
that's
I can remember.
That's the point of the podcast. That's the whole reason Jeremy and I do it, for moments like that.
My friend Rusty's house, or go to Craig's house for the WWF pay-per-views, or go over to WCW paper. Ah, my God, yes. Good, yes, that's awesome. And, yeah, I'm talked out as well, too. We can't really, you know, top that anyway, so... Enjoy the time you have. Enjoy the shows coming up here. And as we say on Observer Live, we shall talk to you again after a while and stuff.